Hi. Thank you very much, William.
Thanks, man.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Hi, my name is David.
Hi, David.
And I get to be your speaker bookie for this meeting.
Yeah. Oh, you? Sorry about that.
No problem. Okay, don't worry about it.
So if the speaker's no good, come to me. It's a really great pleasure. Let's give a warm vacanada welcome to one of my really just greatest examples of Al-Anon, David B. from Los Angeles.
Hi, my name is David Bame. I'm a very grateful member of Al-Anon.
Hi, David.
I'm happy to be here. So when I was very new in Al-Anon, one of the people that I learned to, that I got to know and learned to trust, said to me that we worked the steps in our own way and pace, but it was her her experience that it takes a year to work a step in depth, and that to work the 12 steps of Al-Anon, it could take 12 years in depth. And so I've been a member of Al-Anon for 26 years now. So at that rate, I've had the opportunity to work all 13 steps twice. But I'm not going to talk about that. I have been a member since August of 1991, which is about when this meeting was starting as well. So thank you for that, and thank you for starting this meeting. It's one that I can get to periodically as time allows, but it's always a warm and comforting place to be, and I hear good program here, and I love to be here. I want to thank David for asking me to speak here. You're an example of the program, and I love you. So I said I've been a member for 26 years. Welcome to the newcomers. I don't tell you that to impress you or to depress you. It just, they say keep coming back, and that's what they mean. One of the things that I saw when I was a new member of Al-Anon is that the people that I wanted to be like, the people that I wanted what they had, they just kept showing up. And they showed up, they got a sponsor, they worked the steps, they were of service. And so I knew that if I wanted what they had, if I wanted to deal with the things that were happening in my life that had sent me here, got me here, with the dignity and grace that I saw them exhibiting, then I had to do what they did. There's this thing that happened in my family a long, long time ago in 1872. In 1872, my great-grandfather shot and killed his brother-in-law, my great-great-uncle. My great-great-uncle was an alcoholic. He'd been married to my great-grandfather's sister, and he beat her. She left and went to stay with her brother. Her husband came to bring her back, and my great-grandfather shot him and killed him. And that was 1872 in Sonoma, California. It was frontier rehab. One step. So that was 1872. In 1992, flash forward, 1992, I attended a family reunion. And actually, it was the two parts of the family that had been divided by that shooting in 1872. That was the first time they had talked to each other in 120 years. Now that tells me two things. One, my family has been affected by alcoholism. And two, we really know how to hold a grudge. I've carried that skill on. I have it. That's one of those things that I get to work on. So what got me to Al-Anon in 1991 was a romantic relationship with a woman who's drinking interested me. Challenged me. And so romantic relationship, which I found out later was really neither. So what I had done in that relationship, I was working at a job, and some folks that she worked for an affiliated organization, and some folks that knew both of us thought that we would be good together, and so they got us together. And I first met her at a benefit concert. It was a bar. There was a band playing. There was drinking going on. She was holding a drink with ice that clinked and sent shivers down my spine. She talked about drinking gin and tonic and not liking the flavor, but she finished each drink and had another. And I didn't understand that. If you don't enjoy it, why would you drink it? And so we went on that night, we talked a little bit and got to know each other a little bit, and the party kind of moved from that benefit concert to somebody's house. And I remember I was sitting in the corner of the room, which is kind of what I do. It's kind of who I am. Sitting in the corner of the room, and I was watching her across the room. And she was the life of the party. She was, you know, kind of big and buxom and smiling. She had big teeth. She was laughing a lot. And what I saw, the thing that she had, the quality she had that attracted me more than I can say, is that somehow through all of that, she seemed kind of sad to me. And so I set about trying to make her happy. Completely against her will, by the way. But somehow I took that on as my job, and that's my disease. That's my disease. So, you know, we started seeing each other, we started dating, and there were obviously problems pretty early on in that relationship. We were together for about 2 years, but it was an intense 2 years. We packed a lot of living into that 2 years. So I'm going to talk about the thing I don't like talking about. And in that relationship, that was the only time in my life in that relationship when I was violent with another person. And there was a moment where, after a drunken party, I don't remember what happened exactly, but I remember my arm went up, and I had a clear, conscious thought, a moment where I thought, David, don't do it. Don't do it. It'll change your life forever. This is not something you can go back from. And I didn't know how not to do that. Now, that thought dogged me for the rest of my life. When my friends in Alcoholics Anonymous talk about pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization of taking another drink when they know they shouldn't, that's my pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. And I did something that I know I knew I shouldn't have done, and I didn't know how not to do it. And I had that moment where I knew, and I kept telling myself, David, you knew. You knew not to do that, and I didn't know how not to do that. And, but that was, those were the things that I was dealing with when I came to Al-Anon. What happened, how I got to Al-Anon, I still don't exactly know. What I know is that I changed in that relationship in a way that was not good. That I did a bunch of things to try and make the relationship something that it wasn't. And one of the things that I did was that I went to, I mentioned that we worked for two different but affiliated organizations. Well, I moved from my job to a job at her organization because I thought it would bring us closer. I think I said, welcome to the newcomers. I want to welcome the newcomers. If that's a plan that you've had, please keep coming back. I had the plan. It didn't work for me. That's just my experience. But so I changed jobs. I tried everything that I could think of to make that relationship better than it was. She had a son from a previous marriage, and I had a son from a previous marriage, and they were just a couple of years apart. And so we went about trying to make a family, and it was never gonna happen, but I didn't know that. And so one of the other things, the pitiful and incomprehensible demoralizations that I had to live with when I came to Al-Anon and that I had to learn to cope with is that I had taken my son from our home. I was a single father and I was raising him, and I had moved him into an alcoholic home and tried to make that a family, and I'd introduced him to the alcoholic family. Now, it was in my family going back, but I really put him in the middle of that. And so we tried. And just what happened was, we were working at the same organization. The behavior that I was exhibiting was not what I was proud of. And there was one day, and it was just before my son's 8th birthday. There was one day where there was a guy at work who thought that he could tell me what to do simply because his job title was David Supervisor. And he came in and told me to do something. And I didn't think it was a good idea. And I explained to him why I didn't think it was a good idea. And he told me to do it anyway. And I thought clearly he hadn't heard me the first time. And maybe I needed to, you know, use different words or use more volume or something like that. And probably about the third or fourth time that I was trying to explain to him why it was not a good idea, I stood up from my desk. And he took that as a threat. That was a Thursday night. I got fired Friday morning from that job. My son's 8th birthday was Saturday. And his mother came to the party and let me know that she was going to be seeking custody. And the woman who I've been in a relationship with came to that party and let me know that she was going to be moving on. So it was a period of about 36 hours that I lost my job, my relationship, and had my relationship with my 8-year-old son threatened. And that was not the best weekend of my life. But what I'll tell you is that it got my attention. It got my attention. I don't know if anything less would have gotten me to the point where I could walk into a room filled with people like you and say, I need help. Now, I went into a spiral around that. And I didn't know about Al-Anon. I still don't know. I don't know how I ever heard about Al-Anon. That was part of the fog that went on. And it only went, it didn't happen for very long. I'm lucky, because some more damage could have happened. But for about 3 weeks, I couldn't sleep, I couldn't eat, I was alternately homicidal and suicidal. I just lost everything, and I knew I had to take care of myself and find ways to do that, and I didn't know how. I went to the gym a lot. I went to see funny movies, I read good books, I did all that I could do to keep something positive going on in my life. And that was good. I mean, it was good. I got through a lot of time that way. I went to the gym, I exercised, I ran on the beach. I mean, look, I don't tan, you can tell that, but I got a nice rosy glow. And I looked all right. And it worked fine until about 2 a.m. And I would go to bed at a reasonable hour and lie there. And I would toss and I would turn. And finally, I would take a gun out of the closet and I would load it. And I would stare down the barrel. And finally, I would drift off to sleep about 1:30 or 2. I would put the gun on the bedstand, and then I'd wake up at 4 a.m. thinking. Now, I don't know about you guys, I've never had a good thought at 4 a.m. That is not when I do my best thinking. So I would think things like, maybe I just need to go for a walk. Well, now she lived 3 blocks away. Okay, so nowadays, that's stalking, it's a felony. But that was another part of the pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. I knew I was doing things that were wrong and sad and pathetic, and I couldn't stop. And so I don't know how I got to Al-Anon. I don't know who said, David, there's a program for people who've been, you know, who come from alcoholic homes, who've been affected by somebody else's drinking. I have no idea. I know that after a weekend, I think it was the fourth weekend, of loading and unloading that gun, and then getting up and going for a walk. After that weekend, I called the Al-Anon Central office. No idea why. And I lived in Huntington Beach at the time. And they led me to a meeting Tuesday evening at 6 o'clock. And I went to that meeting. There was a woman leading the meeting, and she was talking. She was this perky little blonde woman, and she was talking about doing exactly the same stuff I'd been doing for the past 3 weeks, for the past 2 years in the relationship, and for my entire life. She was talking about doing all of those things, and they were laughing. And I thought, these people are nuts. I'm home. You know, I thought I was right about everything. But it's at the same time, I felt like I was wrong about everything too. And so there I was, and I went to Al-Anon. Now that was a that was a long process. A lot of things happened that were painful. That relationship was on again, off again for a little while after that, because we never break up just once. So that happened, and. But like I said, I was listening to people who I was going to meetings with, and I was picking out the people that had what I wanted. There were people who were dealing with real life pain in those rooms, and they were talking about it directly, lovingly, without blaming other people, and trying to find solutions. And I didn't really know what that was or how they got that, but I wanted that. And like I said before, I just tried to do what they did. So they talked about working the steps, so I tried to work the steps. They talked about getting a sponsor, and so I got a sponsor. My sponsor's name is Bernie. Bernie's been my sponsor for 26 years. In those 26 years, he's never said an unkind word to me. He's never said, that was stupid. I've said it. He's never said, what the hell were you thinking? I've said it. Now, what he did, Bernie's, you know, alert that there may be a problem is, well, that was an interesting choice. So I had a head that told me everything I did was wrong. And I had a loving man who told me it was okay. And I never experienced that before. So I started working the steps with Bernie. And we would go for walks. And he lived in Dana Point, or in Laguna Niguel. And we'd go down to Dana Point, we'd walk around the harbor. And he'd say things like, so what does the first step mean to you? That's all. And then he'd just listen to my answer. And he didn't say, well, don't you think it should be this? Or what about that? He just said, oh, that sounds about right. And then he'd say, what does the second step mean to you? And I'd tell him what it meant to me at that point. And by the way, all of those steps mean different things to me now than they did then, as do all of the traditions. And that's the way it's supposed to be, as near as I can tell. So, you know, we walked and we talked and we did that, Bernie and me. And now Bernie was married, his wife Jane, who has since passed away. I got this kind of double bonus, because both Bernie is a member of Al-Anon, Jane is a member of Al-Anon. And if I couldn't get through to Bernie, I could get through to Jane. And Jane was more direct. And I remember one time when it was maybe 2 or 3 years into the program, that I thought I was all better and ready to date again. And I was telling, I talked to Jane and I was telling her all of the things that this woman had done. And Jane said, oh dear, she must be in a lot of pain. And I said, good. It seemed only right to me. And Jane's response was, with an attitude like that, you really don't deserve a good relationship. And she was absolutely right. I can't wish somebody my version of cosmic justice and still think that I'm in a loving relationship, because I'm not being loving. So I learned a lot from Jane. So, you know, we started going through the steps. We did all of that. I should tell you how I met Bernie. There weren't an awful lot of men in the program at that time. Not so many. This is Orange County. And I think it's actually against the law there. So, So there I was a newcomer in Al-Anon, and there were all these wonderful, wonderful women who were very kind to me. And one of the things that they often said to me is they would say, you know, you really ought to meet Bernie. He'd be a great sponsor for you. You know, he lives down south a little bit. You can find him. He's got meetings down there. Maybe they were just telling me to go to other meetings. I don't know. But they said, you got to meet Bernie. And there was this one time when there was an announcement in a meeting. And I was doing everything Al-Anon, right? I didn't have a job, right? So I had lots of time. So I went to meetings. I went to meetings in the daytime, I went at night, I just went to meetings. And I was at one of my meetings and there was an announcement that there was a convention planning meeting and anybody could go. Well, I didn't know what a convention was. I had never been to one. I didn't know what a convention planning meeting was, but I was everyone, so I could go. So I went and watched the convention planning meeting, and it was scintillating, but I was sitting in the back of the room because that's what I do, and at the head table there was a group of, everybody else in the, kind of set up like this but smaller, was it was all women, and there was a head table and it was all women and a guy. And he was the chairperson that year. And when he said his name, it was Bernie. And what I saw is I saw that he was in complete control of a room full of women. I wanted what he had. So we've been trudging that path of happy destiny together ever since, and you know, still, man's never said an unkind word to me. So I mentioned my son, who was 8 when I got here, that meeting that I went to on Tuesday night, it had a pre-teen meeting at the same time. And there was also, at the same location, in the same room, there was another Al-Anon meeting at 8 p.m., and there was an Al-Anon meeting for that. So I could go to that 6 o'clock meeting, and my 8-year-old son could go to the pre-teen meeting. And I thought it was babysitting. By the way, I am a grateful and happy Alateen sponsor today. I've been an Alateen sponsor for 15 years. I get way more than I give. So it only took me 10 years of seeing Alateen sponsors and seeing that they were people that I admired and loved to want to care enough about myself that I would actually step forward and be one. I took my son to that meeting and he started, and apparently they talked about programming there, who knew? I thought they were doing puzzles and stuff. So there was this one time, not too long after that, and I was still pretty angry and I was still pretty frustrated, my son and I were driving in the car and he had done something horrible. I don't know what, I think it was homework involved. And I was going off. My face was bright red. I was pounding on the steering wheel and I was yelling at him. And I paused for breath, which I've since learned not to do. And I paused for breath and he said, "Dad, you're hungry." "You're angry. You're lonely. And you're making me tired." I found in that moment it is impossible for me, at least, to rage and laugh at the same time. There was a lot more that happened with my son. One of the things that happened is that, you know, he was 8 years old. He acted frighteningly like an 8-year-old at 8. And he did things like not clean his room. Now, I would take that because I'd learned just take everything to program in all our affairs, right? I would talk to my sponsor, I would share with people at or after meetings, and I would talk about that. And none of them said, "Go ahead, get in there, David, you fix him." None of them said that. And by the way, one of the things that became very apparent to me is that my disease is I criticize. Now there is, my wife will attest to that. My disease is I criticize. There is a line in the Just for Today bookmark that says, criticize not one bit. And some jerk pointed that out to me earlier. And thank you, it's being held up. Okay. Criticize not one bit. Now, there are not an awful lot of loopholes in that statement. Not one bit. And so I was being taught to let my son be who he was and love him no matter what. I was told I could close the door to his bedroom, which was a mess. I was told I could do that. But other than that, I could leave him alone. Now, one of the things that happened is that this went on for a long time. It was horrible. It was excruciating. It was growth. You don't get growth without growing pains. So that went on for 2 years. By the way, most of my lessons seem to take about 2 years. There's a thread there. Went on for about 2 years, and one morning we were sitting in the house. I was reading a paper Saturday morning, and my son had been watching cartoons, and he finished the cartoons and trotted off to his room, and he was gone for a while, like 2 hours. And he came back out after a little while, and he got me, and he led me back into his room, and he cleaned his room. Now, I sometimes hear people tell stories like that, and the message I think I hear, and I could be wrong, but the message I think I hear is, I let go and they did what I thought they should have done. Okay? So here's my message from that. For 2 years, one day at a time, I got to not screw up my relationship with my son because I can't just criticize one bit. I can't have just one criticism. Right? So 2 years, one day at a time, I got to let him be who he was, love him right where he was, and let him be. Now, you may be different. I'm not saying that that is, you know, your issue, your story, whatsoever. I'm saying for me, if I criticize, I can't stop. So that was a lesson. Another thing happened with my son, and that was that, look, he went through adolescence. It's called adolescence. And from the time he was about 12 until about, coincidentally, 2 years later, I've said he hated me. And others who were there, including his Alateen sponsors, said, he didn't hate you. But I was once again encouraged not to try and fix his feelings, not to try and explain to him why he was wrong to resent me, to not take that on, to just let him be and love him. So I did that. It was not easy. It was 2 years of excruciating growth opportunity. And one night, I woke up in the middle of the night to see him standing over my bed with a knife in his hand. And I knew it was time for outside help. And we've talked about that. We talk about that in program. And so we went to get help, and we went to a counselor. Now, there was a guy who was recommended by a bunch of people in program, both AA and Al-Anon. He was a member of AA. And I'm sure he was a wonderful counselor, therapist, whatever. But he was the worst damn therapist I've ever seen. We had 6 sessions with him. The push and pull between me and my son. My son was 14 years old at that time. This was just about the time of Columbine. He had long hair. He wore black trench coats. He wore boots on the outside of his pants. He had that look. And it scared people. Now, my son is the sweetest, kindest, most loving kid in the world. He's 34, he's not a kid. But he scared people then. And so we were in this session with this therapist, and the therapist had a big full-length mirror in his office, which I suspect he used to look at himself at a lot. He was very well dressed. He was very well dressed. But he took my son and stood him in front of the mirror and pointed out everything that was wrong with him. Look at your hair, it scares people. Look at your clothes. And I was sitting there watching this happen. And I thought, holy crap, I'm paying this guy $150 to have my Al-Anon slip for me. And those were the things I wanted to say and had been trying to learn not to say. And not saying, by the way. That was the sixth session. We got in the car after that session and I said to my son, I don't like the way he talks to you. And that's where it turned around. So maybe what we needed was just a common enemy. But it worked. Now, I'm sure that guy, maybe that was his plan. I don't know, maybe it was. Maybe he was just a jerk. But that's how it turned out. And that's just, you know, taking the next indicated step and having some faith that it will turn out. My son and I are very close today. We talk, we ride motorcycles together, we spend a lot of time when time permits, and that's a good thing. He's 34, he's healthy, he's happy, he has good friends, and he's a pleasure to be around. So there was this thing that came up pretty early on in working the steps for me, and that was that I've talked about my son and I've talked about the family that I came from, and one of the things that happened is that it became very apparent to me very early on that in the family that I grew up in, not just the great-grandfather, but just in the mother, father, sibling family that I grew up in, there was alcoholism and dysfunction. Now, my father was extremely functional. My father was a teacher. He was one of those teachers that people go up to on the street and say, "You changed my life." And they, when we were out as a family together, they would thank us for my father, the teacher. So one of the things I have to tell you is, he took it all to work. Okay? So when I was new in Al-Anon, and I was starting to take a look at my life and trying to work a fourth step, it took me, by the way, on that step a year plan, it was in the fourth year that I did an honest fourth step. I gave it tries before that, but in the fourth year I did an honest fourth step, which is why I believe in that. So in doing that fourth step and looking at my family, it became very apparent to me that there was this dysfunction. And I gotta say that because of the way I was built and raised and brought up, all it was for a long time was I was just looking for somebody else to blame for the fact that I was still miserable. And so if I could blame my father or blame my mother or blame whoever, then I had an excuse. Now, I didn't get any happier, but I had an excuse. And that's almost as good as being happy. And So I was just looking for someone to blame. And so a lot that happened. Growing up with my dad was rough. He did drink. I mentioned at the beginning the sound of ice in a glass, and that's a trigger for me, and it's a trigger because that was the sound I had with my dad. And that was the sound I had when he was angry, too. When he was angry, the other thing I got was the back of his right hand, and I got it right there. And it happened a lot. I got knocked unconscious a number of times as a child. And I thought it was normal. Now, one of the things that happens when that's your life as a child is that you grow up, one, thinking it's normal, but also in a kind of a constant state of alert and threat of violence. And, you know, you kind of walk around with your fist balled up. And so as I worked through the steps, as I did the fourth step, as I shared that with my sponsor, as I tried to let go of those resentments and tried to think, put people on my resentment list for the eighth step and got ready to make amends to them in the ninth step, my father was on that list, and I, God damn it, I knew he was on that list, and I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to talk to the son of a bitch. I didn't want to do it. And so, but here's the thing. Nobody in here, nobody in any of the meetings I went to or you know, not my sponsor, not anybody, ever said, you know what, if you don't feel like it, don't worry about it. So I made a grudging amends. And when it was time for me to say to my father, the thing that I knew I had done that harmed him, that I harmed him, is that I've not been a loving son to him. You can say there were reasons for that, but that's still my part. I've not been a loving son to him. And so I said that to him, and he totally agreed with me. He had a few examples of his own. Apparently, he'd been hoarding those for a while. But I did it, right? I did it. I didn't feel free. I didn't feel better. Well, about two years later, started to feel a little better. It's okay, it's a long game. So I made that amends. It was what it was. I went on with my life. But I stayed in contact, and I tried to, part of the amends was, I tried to be a loving son, right? I tried to show up, I tried to listen, I tried to do all of that. Now, a couple of years after that, I grew up in the Bay Area, and I was up there for work, and took my folks to dinner at this place that we always went to. And we had this long dinner. My dad had just retired, and he was telling me the story of visiting a friend of his, that lifelong friend of his, who had also retired and moved somewhere else. And okay, so I'm just gonna use the language that he used, and what an asshole this guy was. And how he visited him, and he was mean to his family, and he was mean to the people at the waiter at the restaurant. And just what an asshole he was. He told me this story for an hour. I don't know how anybody could talk for an hour. But we're getting there. We're going to find out. So he told me this story for an hour. And at the end of it, he said, I guess what I'm trying to say is I'm trying not to be such an asshole. And it dawned on me, he had that moment too. He had that moment too. That time when I didn't know how not to do something, he had that every time he raised his hand. He had that every time he did any of the things that led to his pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. Every time he didn't live up to his own image of himself. He had that too. I got to see, a couple of years after that, my dad had a heart attack. Actually, he had a series of heart attacks, and my father, being my father, drove 20 miles to his hospital, not the hospital that he was right next to, while he was having heart attacks. So, we're a little stubborn. So I got to see him, and as it happened when I got to the hospital, it was again, it was in San Francisco, and saw him all, I got there at night, and he was all alone, and he was connected to tubes and, you know, and all of that stuff that happens. And in working the steps, I had taken that resentment list that I had, those lists of things that pissed me off, and one of the things that happened slowly over time is that I had a list of things that I was grateful for. Things that my father gave me that made me who I am. He taught me about literature and music and theater and art, and those were important to him. And he needed to pass those on. That was his gift to me. And so I was in the room with him, and he was barely conscious, and he started telling me about all the horrible things he knew he'd done. And all I could say was the things that he'd given me that made me who I am. And that was the only response I had. I didn't know what to say or do other than that. My father only died about 3 years ago at the age of 90. And I saw him about 3 weeks before he died. And he knew it was close. And he was in the home that I grew up in. He made the choice to stay at home. And we were alone in the living room at one point. And he started talking, and he was talking so faintly I couldn't hear him. And I had to move closer, and he said, "Why didn't you tell on me? You could have ruined me. Why didn't you do that?" And I didn't know what to say. But the first question on the fourth step that I did was, what was it like for your parents growing up? And at age 36, 7, 8, when I first did that, when I first saw that question, that was the first time I thought about it. And it was awful. My father grew up in a violent home. He carried it on. He didn't know how to do it any differently than that. And so the thing that I could think of to say was, he said, "Why didn't you ruin me?" And I said, "I know where you come from." That's all I could say. I knew where he came from. I knew what it felt like to never live up to your own expectations. I knew what it felt like. I knew what it felt like to be taught physically that you were wrong in everything you did. And the gift that I get from that knowledge is that I get to try one day at a time, little by little, to do it differently. So this other thing happened. In 2009, my friend David and I went down to San Diego for the Southern California Al-Anon, or AA convention with Al-Anon and Al-Ateen participation. So we went down, and we got there Friday night. We were in horrible traffic. We were sitting there forever. And we went in and we registered and picked up the directory and went to dinner. It was a nice little restaurant. We had our salads and we were eating our salads and I started looking at the directory. And I looked at the marathon meeting listings and I said, oh, David, we gotta go. The prettiest woman in Al-Anon is Sherry. And David is a remarkably good sport. We had gotten through our salads, we put our entrees in a to-go box, and we went and we sat down, and we listened to Louise, who is my wife today. And everything that I've told you about criticism, she already knows. So, thank you for sharing that with me and for being willing to put your prime rib in a box. And go. I'd known Louise from service. We were both involved in World Service around that time. And, we got to talk and spend some time together over the course of that weekend. And then I happened, by some strange coincidence, I live in LA, I found a way to get to San Diego for some work. And I don't know, it was like 3-4 weeks later, and I didn't have Louise's phone number, but I had her email from World Service, and I got to send her an email and say, would you be available for dinner? And she showed up in a short black dress, and the rest is history. And I can't tell you how grateful I am for my life, for everything that I've gotten out of this program, for the healing that has happened all around. And it's not everywhere yet. It's not everywhere. But I'll keep coming back. And I'm a very grateful member of Al-Anon. Thank you for letting me share.